It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Okay. Testing. Woff is sneezing. That's a sneeze test. A new invention made by me. Jesus, Woff. Like a machine gun sneezer. Alright, Luke, real quick. I started a new file. Say something.
Something.
Good. Something.
Alright.
Okay, now we're good. Alright. Ready for the countdown, Woff? Should I start? Oh, you need a minute. There's some water there. Good. Alright, let's start. 5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome to another movie podcast, the show that practices Krav Maga and the art of war right before doing our taxes and crunching bank numbers. I'm Oscar, and with me today is... Did you not see the accountant? With me today is...
Luke.
Oh, Jesus. And?
A sick Ralph.
Are you sick? I thought you were just, like, sneezing. You just look sneezing.
I feel like you should, like, run your intros with us before so we can tell you yes or no.
Well, since you put no effort into anything besides what you're here for... No, I don't think I will. Let's see. Today's show, what we'll be doing is Luke picked the shows today. So if you hate the roster for today, blame Luke. His Twitter is Blind Noir, by the way. We'll start off today's show with The Accountant, a thriller starring Ben Affleck about numbers genius or a math wizard with crazy combat training. And we'll move on to our girl with the girl on the train, which is another thriller, this time starring Emily Blunt, who gets involved into some sort of suburban murder mystery. I don't know. I haven't seen that one. I'm the only one who hasn't seen that one. It's going to be interesting to find out what that movie is about. And then we'll end our show with the weird Yoga Hosers, the latest by writer-director Kevin Smith, about a pair of teenage girls fighting the forces of evil out of a Canadian convenience store. Remember, you can always send all feedback and knowledge to and questions to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website at otherpodcast.com for all updates and whatnots and way to donate to our show, as well as all detailed show notes are available on every podcast so you can better skip around to what you have seen or what you have not. The bonus episode for this month for anybody who donates in the month of October, on November 1st, they will get a bonus episode of The Birth of a Nation, which is the latest by Nate Parker, I think his name is. You guys heard of this movie, right?
Yes.
Anyone interested in watching this movie?
It's a biopic. So.
I hear it's like the Braveheart, but for that period.
I'm down to check it out.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it, so.
That's all I know. I haven't seen a trailer yet either. So, but I hear it's getting some buzz. So one of us or two of us at least, but maybe all three of us will watch it and provide that bonus for anyone who donates. That would be kind of cool. Donations will come out the bonus episodes for anyone who donates this month will come out on November 1st around midnight. That way I get everyone's tally in if there is more than one. Last time it was two.
Me and Ralph?
You guys didn't pay shit. Anyway, let's before we continue on to our main reviews for the evening, let's talk a little bit about what we've been watching. Ralph, we're going to start off with you this time. I hear you've been watching some 30 for 30 film. You want to talk about it?
I'm good.
Okay. Go fuck yourself.
I
know. Luke?
No. I have been watching, besides TV and sports, I've been watching sports documentaries. Go figure. Right?
How many have you been watching lately? I'm just curious.
Lately, I only saw this one.
Okay.
I've been going through discs, so I don't know, 5 at a time.
What disc are you in? But do you know?
I think 4. In 5. Europe. I'm not too sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, so what's this
one? So the one I saw, and it's kind of like good timing, I guess, or good enough timing. It's called The House of Steinbrenner, which is a very famous, what's it called, owner.
Isn't that Elaine's boss in Seinfeld?
No, that's George's boss in Seinfeld. Because he worked for the Yankees.
Is that supposed to be someone that's real?
Yeah,
because of the name you just
called? He is real, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I know nothing.
Yeah, George Stripe. He was the sports owner, and his family is now the sports owner because he's
of the Yankees.
Yeah, of the Yankees.
Okay. That's a baseball,
right?
Shit! Yes, I got it right.
It's pretty hard to get that one wrong.
Okay, sure. If you say so.
I don't think there's any other team called the Yankees.
You don't know my brain.
This is true, and it shows kind of like hit the era of Steinbrenner, 90s, 2000s, and then how it like how when he took over and did all the stuff that he did for the team, you know, and stuff like that. Like the big areas when how he's always been a guy who's like, I'm going to throw money at a situation. And obviously the fact that he, you know, he picked good people, but he's willing to pay them to have this amazing team. And that's why everyone says like the Yankees have like the most highest paid team or whatever. They're like, yeah, they keep all their players very happy with money, obviously. And that's motivation for them to get fucking win some World Series. That's why.
Yeah. A lot of crime syndicates work that way too. Like you overpay your thugs so they never leave you or be disloyal.
Sure.
I don't know why I said that.
I get what you mean, though. And it kind of shows, like, how it went through, because it was a good timing, I guess, between the documentary covers that time and when the Sun took over and how they just made the new field a couple years ago, new stadium. They tore down the old one. So, and it's still called Yankee Stadium. They didn't change the name of it. They just basically modernized the fuck out of it. And it shows like a big transition and how they did, and they ended up winning that year the World Series in their new house, which they did the same time when they first opened in the Yankees. So kind of like good karma, good luck.
So how much did you know before watching this short film? Well, 60 minutes.
I know a lot. I know enough about the history of New York baseball. Mm-hmm. Not as much. I mean, you learn more names obviously, and way more that's going on. Mm-hmm. But I guess you get to just see how like. You know, it's more like an ode to, like this person and the Yankee Stadium as well, and like what it represents for a lot of people.
So it's clearly like going in that direction only. Is
sure.
That seeking to do any super undercover.
No, it just shows like both, and it kind of shows like where the team can go, because it is, even though it is George Steinbrenner who they focus on mainly, and mm-hmm. that is literally the main thing they focus on, but. That also shows, like, well, it's called the House of Steinbrenner because
it's
still staying.
Is that a deeper joke of the fact? Seinfeld is now getting way better for me. Is it a deeper joke now because Steinbrenner hires George and he's completely incompetent? Is that supposed to be some sort of joke about the whole House of Steinbrenner thing?
Yes and no, I guess. It's supposed to be like they kind of like mentioned it.
I'm just like trying to like lifeline this through something that I know when that's Seinfeld. So
sure, I guess it's more of the fact that like he well. The way he acts in the show is kind of like a real life kind of thing.
Okay.
Like the way he acts in the show is like all like, no, I want this done and I want it my way done and it's like the only my way or whatever and that's the only way it exists.
Get the calzone.
And he's really like how he speaks to you, like exactly like that.
Yeah.
You know, but if you have come up with a good idea or whatever, just like what George does, he's like, that's brilliant, you know.
Those are funny scenes, though. I like them. All right, cool. So that's the House of Steinbrenner. Brenner. That's what you've been watching. Luke, you have something as well. I believe the film that we were supposed to see.
Yes, I'm the only one that actually went to see it.
Well, before it went off the air, let's face it.
It was still there.
No. Right before it went off the air, like I said, I couldn't make those showings. I just wasn't going to make those showings. So,
you still had 6 days before they went off from Chicago.
I couldn't make those showings. I just told you. I saw all the movies like yesterday.
Whose fault is that?
Well, I couldn't do it until then.
There's a will, there's a way, good friend.
Yeah.
All right, Snowden.
Hey, I've only missed one in this entire time we've done this. This is today. You've missed how many?
When I was in New York?
Or any other time? Haven't you missed before?
Yeah, it's Magnificent Seven.
Well, there's a time, there's a will, there's a way, and you, whatever. Anyway, go ahead.
Snowden, the politically charged, pulse-pounding thriller starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Shailene Woodley, reveals the untold personal story of Edward Snowden.
Shailene Woodley's in this?
Yeah. The polarizing figure who exposed shocking illegal surveillance activities by the NSA and became one of the most wanted men in the world. He's considered a hero by some and a traitor by others.
I love. And just like a regular Joe for like a passersby. So, go ahead.
No, I thought it was amazing.
Amazing.
Right.
You don't use that word lightly?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, like one of the best biopics I've seen recently.
Hmm.
Although I'm surprised Oliver Stone didn't take any liberties with this one. He kind of laid it really flat for you.
I heard he did, especially towards the end.
I don't think he did.
I heard in the third act he does.
He kind of just lets you like, okay, I mean, what do you think he did?
So I can't say.
So obviously, it's kind of like, he doesn't steer you that he did the right thing, he did the wrong thing. Kind of just leaves it in the middle.
Okay.
So that's really good. So
Maybe he lost a bet. You know,
since
like
this day, I'm still thinking about it.
He was
like,
gambling
his
with
best
Steven
friend,
Spielberg and all those guys.
A. Kitman Ho or Ron Kovic. Check your IMDb. Like bet him, like, hey, I dare you to do a movie straightforward. Nah, man, nah, I can't lose this bet. And he fails or something at, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really good, especially like at the end when they twist it up and actually throw in the real Snowden in there.
Hmm.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt is so goddamn good. It took me a while to realize it.
Well, I've seen the Citizen 4 film.
Yeah, then I
By the way, it. Everyone go out. It's like an important piece of history you should watch. Yeah. It's like History Live.
I saw it after the
movie, really good.
Too.
Everyone, it's like, man, I will put it in classrooms. Not because the movie's great, just because the material is so, it's part of you, man.
Right.
That's how I feel anyway. You didn't get to see it either, right, Ralph?
Negative,
okay. But you do recommend it. I will watch it when it comes out, especially before we do our top 10 of the year. I want to definitely put this in my consideration box.
Right. I would say Luke does use the word amazing very lightly. So.
I know I try not to. But I know he's used it in the past.
Yeah.
To describe like a burrito even. Like, so.
Okay, burritos are amazing.
See what
fuck
I mean?
You.
No, they're not. Anyway,
you just don't know how to.
I've got two films for you guys today. One is a film that's funny enough is that a movie that Luke recommended. It just took me this long to watch it. Is The Big Short, which came out last year. It's available on Netflix to watch.
I was about to say it's out of my Netflix queue, and I just every time I hover over it, I'm like, yeah.
I know. That's why I said too for the longest time until 2 days ago, and I was like bored, and I was like just like compiling. I was just doing some video stuff. But it was rendering and all that stuff and sharing and exporting. So while I was doing that, I'm like, I'm going to watch something. And I was like, fuck it. Big Short. I'll see if whatever, how it's about. And I was so into it. I ended up watching
really?
It straight through. Yes.
I'm pretty sure I said that movie was amazing, too.
I would never say it's amazing.
Like I said. Yeah. Like
it's
I
amazing.
Said.
I don't think it's amazing.
That's great.
It's not your number one movie of the year.
It wasn't, but it was on
so
the top
have,
10.
Yeah, so you're saying that's that many amazing movies. I'm not even going to get into you with this. You know you're in a failing, digging hole you're in right now.
Nope.
Nice coffin, bitch. No. Big Short. I'm trying to be on your side here, and you're making it really difficult right now. You're such a cock. Anyway.
You said cock, and you went,
I know I did.
You cocky cock.
You cocky cock. I don't know. The Big Short. So it's about the 2008 collapse housing shit. You know, big, horrible things. We watched movies like this before. Some are really good. Some are really bad. 99 Homes is a part of this. I talked about it last year. Cosmopolis is a big part of this. I'm just mentioning the really good ones for me. One that's okay, so-so, what's the one made by the... Oh, you lost it. Scott. I forgot the name of it.
That's awful.
It's with Kevin Spacey and Jeremy Irons. And
the guy
who plays the new Spock. Quinto.
I wouldn't even know.
You've seen it, I think. I just don't like it.
Zachary Quinto?
Yeah, Zachary. The other Zachary. Yeah, anyway.
House of Cards?
I would say that as far as...
I was thinking about House of Cards, but I don't remember Zachary Quinto in that.
Anyway, as far as those kind of movies, though, I think The Big Short might be my favorite about that kind of thing. Like, it's really surprisingly well done, and the way they make it a craft, and they make it their goal to make you understand in a fun way what is happening in real life time in the movie, of course, not in real life, obviously, but in the movie, in 2 year span, they cover the crisis from its beginning, from these guys to figure it out, and then getting to the point to where they exploit it. It's so cool. And not just like the cool, like you'll see whatever singer actress that was, Selena Gomez, playing blackjack to explain to you what OCDs are. And like, I never thought I would say that I would understand even remotely what happened during the housing thing. But after seeing this movie, it's like both entertaining but helpful at the same time. And it has a nice little story to it. Not every character works, but I really, really, really liked... what's his name? From 40-Year-Old Virgin. What's his name? I'm not good with comedians, guys.
Steve Carell.
Yeah. I like Steve Carell's team and the way and the stuff. That dinner table scene when he's talking to that guy and just his dreams are crushed about humanity. It's my favorite scene, probably. Wait, hold on. I'm looking. Margin Call. That's it. Margin Call. That was the name of that movie. It has some good dialogue, but Margin Call is okay. Anyway, so yeah, I really liked it. The Big Short. I recommend it. It's on Netflix. If you're one of those people who kind of just like dismiss it because it looked whatever, and I'm not even an Adam McKay fan, and I haven't seen most of his work anyway, even though most people in the world have, like Anchorman and shit. I haven't seen that, but you know, I might see his other movies now. Maybe they're really good. Whatever.
Have fun with that.
I know, right? Next up, I want to recommend a horror movie real quick that I saw recently that's really cool. I recommend it for you guys, too. It's called Pontypool. Anyone seen it? It's a Canadian film. I know, I heard the silence already. Pontypool is a Canadian film, I believe, at least Canadian, supposedly be in Canada. And I forget the actor, so I don't have anything pulled up. But it's essentially like a bottle episode movie. It takes place in one radio station tower, like this DJ for Shock Jock DJ that's in, I don't know, some bumfuck suburb, right? In Pontypool, that's the name of the town. And zombies attack. But the way the way the budget of the film is, as you can imagine, is very indie. They can't afford anything. You see very little, but it's still just as thrilling and horrifying. So everything is done through sounds, through other people calling into the station where havoc is really going on somewhere else. Things like that, right? It's trying to bypass the actual chaos. And the ways that the zombies, or quote-unquote zombies, whatever they are, work in this world is really cool. It's through language and how the English language becomes cursed. And the more you say, and then when you say a certain key word, maybe with the right inflection, maybe with the meaning, if you know the meaning of the word you're saying, and the second you know its meaning, you become infected. And then your brain starts to become zombie and starts to seek others to infect. It's like a weird spin on that. And I kind of recommend it for you guys to watch it. It's interesting. It's kind of a head trip, but a cool head trip, I think. And I totally dug it. And it's also on Netflix. Pontypool, and it's also Halloween time, so I'm recommending a horror movie. This is my last time I get to do that, by the way. So, that's what we've been watching. I recommend all those movies. So, let us start, finally, with our first review today of The Accountant.
Say you're the head of the Sinaloa cartel. Now, the cartels count their money by weighing it in 18-wheelers. But one sunny Mexican day, your in-house money scrubber comes to you and says you're 30 million light. Who can you trust to do the forensic accounting, track your stolen cash? Deloitte & Touche, H&R Block? You somehow contact an individual capable of coming in cold, uncooking years of books, and getting out alive. I retire in 7 months. Before I do, I need to know who he is. How he does it. I mean, who survives this kind of clientele?
As a math savant uncooks the books for a new client, the Treasury Department closes in on his activities and the body count starts to rise.
I believe it's called Savant.
I love how you can't do anything straight. When you're reading something,
come
you have
on,
to
is
add
like
that.
That is the worst goddamn description for a movie.
Dude, if it was talking about a ladybug crawling on a leaf, you would still put that ending there. The Accountant.
The body count.
I know that you were, Luke, you weren't sure what to choose for this particular roster, right?
Yes.
We had some trouble. We had some fun trouble figuring this out for you. And what made you pick this movie real quick? Oh, did you just really pick it because it was like the movie of the blockbuster week?
Movie of the week kind of deal, probably.
Didn't you know anything about it, really?
I saw the trailer. It just had the good cast.
Mm-hmm.
Affleck.
Oh, and you like Kendrick, right? Kendrick or Kendra? What's her name? Anna Kendrick? Kendrick. Yeah, acapella, acabitches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
J.K. Simmons,
oh,
John
yeah.
Lithgow.
Oh, yeah.
Is it Lithgow or Lithgow?
I always say Lithgow.
Hmm. What do you say, Ralph?
I'd never say his name.
Say it now.
Nope.
He's such a cock.
John.
John. Johnny. John Boy. All right, so cool. The Accountant. What you thought, man?
Kind of cool, but, you know, just kind of.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
But you saw it. You saw this one, right?
I did see this one, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of just a bland action movie. I kind of knew where it was going to go.
Would you call it an action movie?
It had action, yeah.
Only had like two action scenes.
Action.
Okay, it had action, sure, but it wasn't the whole thing.
And
was
drama.
Action.
Maybe a little bit of thriller.
I mean, technically.
Spec of comedy.
I mean, Die Hard is a romance because he kissed, like, he's trying to hook up with his wife in the beginning.
Well, yeah, it's a rom-com.
But it's not.
It is. It's a rom-com with a little action.
It's a Christmas
yeah, come
movie,
to the
guys.
Party. We'll have a few drinks.
Yeah, the Accountant was nothing special.
Okay.
And it's there. I'll probably never buy this one. Or I doubt I'll ever actually watch this movie again. So.
Okay, so kind of in the middle there, right?
Yeah.
My understanding. All right. Ralph, what you think?
What about me?
What you thought about this movie?
Oh.
About this H&R Block attendant.
He could do my books anytime.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, right. That first scene with that couple on the farm, he's just like, yeah. Like, dude, you're just unraveling the system.
Right, I love it. He's like, oh, you mean that small business that she's got?
Very.
How big is her area?
Yeah, 500. Yeah, 400 feet.
200,
feet.
No. 300 feet, okay.
Yeah.
The company car. You took the company car.
Yeah.
By Crafts.
That's perfect.
Yeah. I liked it. I think I liked it more than Luke did.
Yeah, you told me off air you did.
From the sound of it, I think it's, and I've been saying it to everybody, it's Ben Affleck's perfect role, where it's he has to show no emotion, so he does a great job.
So a lot less work for him to do, which is good. I mean, I'm curious what a great, and I know I'm just going to say it off the, I don't care what you people think, Ben Affleck's not a great actor. He's a pretty solid actor, I would say.
He's a solid actor.
He's a solid Hollywood actor, but he's not
his
a great
actor. His acting skills are much better.
Oh,
I mean,
way
like
better.
Argo.
Yeah, Argo's way better than his acting. I know you're trying to make fun of me for some reason, but I like Argo, too. I just don't love it like you do. And you gave me the Blu-ray, you weirdo. But I'm curious what would, like, now that we mentioned it earlier, what would Kevin Spacey do? Who's a great actor in both ways. Hollywood and non-Hollywood stuff. How he, like, what would, I'm saying, I'm more curious as to how anyone else can spin it in a better or different, more nuanced way.
Well, I guess the whole thing about his...
We should probably explain what he has, right? For those who may not know.
Wait, why did you just mention Kevin Spacey?
Because I think he's a great actor.
Oh, okay. I was like, why did...
Was that obvious?
How did Kevin Spacey... Well, yeah, Kevin Spacey's amazing.
Yeah, and I mentioned him earlier with Margin Call. That's why it was in my head. I just said that.
All right, so he's got like this super autism.
Like Asperger's syndrome.
Autism. He's on the spectrum, so.
Yeah. And he has a very different way of growing up, too, was that his military father basically...
Paid men to beat him up and fight them?
Yeah, well, turned him into the Terminator, essentially. taught him all these combat skills and training to prepare himself for the world that will... eventually, you know, essentially turn him down constantly because of his, not just because of his disabilities, but like in addition to that, right? You're human, so you'll get shit rained on you, but you're also autistic or whatever, and you get even more shit rained on. That's my understanding of all that whole thing. It's really black and white to me, right? I mean, what do you have any?
Sure.
Right. So you were saying more, Ralph. What did you like about this movie?
Oh, I don't know. I guess I just like the... I didn't feel it was as... there's action, sure. The end is kind of all action. But I don't classify this as an action movie altogether. I feel more like a thriller, I guess, if you want to look at it that way.
That's how I described it in the opening.
Right. Yeah, but like I was saying, to your point of view of like Kevin Spacey doing this movie, Kevin Spacey just looks menacing when he's not saying anything, which is what...
But he's also played like non-menacing roles really well.
Sure,
it's
yeah.
It's just that we like to know him for those movies.
I get it, but when you have to play the kind of tone that he's got to play in this movie, it would feel like he's menacing. Like, when he's not saying anything.
Like Mr. Brooks?
I didn't see that.
I've only seen a little bit of it, and I remember the trailer more, so I'm going to say I haven't seen it, but I remember the trailer. And the same thing, he's like an assassin. He's very stone-faced the whole time. Kevin Costner in that movie.
Sure, well, it's supposed to be stone-faced, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I felt like Ben Affleck did a good job in this one, so, or for that role anyways.
I think so, too.
Yeah, there's some stuff. I called a lot of things when we were watching the movie, so like...
Oh, God, me too. But it were fun calls, though. Sure. I wasn't like, oh, it's so obvious. I guess obvious enough where it's kind of cool. I can't wait to see how right I am.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, that brother.
I don't know how people can find that middle ground of that. Like, how can you make a surprise not subtle enough where, like, you know... Not too subtle where you can't figure it out, but subtle enough where you figure it out and it'll be kind of cool that you figure it out and not cheesy. How do you find that middle ground?
I'm not too sure.
I think we should explore that one day.
Yeah, but overall, anyway, like I said, I enjoyed it. So.
Cool. I did as well. I think it's kind of a fun, movie of the week, but that's a little higher than that, you know? Almost like what Luke said to what Roth is saying. Like, I don't know if I'd watch this again necessarily. I think I got everything I wanted out of the movie.
Right. And, especially when they did
it. And it kept my attention.
Totally.
Yeah.
For me. I mean, I wasn't looking at my watch, but then again, you always look at your watch. Or your Fitbot, whatever it's called. But what were we going to say?
They had a missed opportunity, too, with Anna Kendrick. You should have made her take off her shirt a couple times. I'm just saying.
All I know is that when she was in that room with all the numbers she had written on the glass, yeah. I don't know why, but Anna Kendrick seemed really small in those scenes.
She's probably tiny.
I know she's tiny based on those scenes now, unless they really played her down. But I think she's a really tiny woman. And I'm like, I think it was more accentuated in those scenes for some reason. I kept like elbowing Lexi, like, look how tiny
she's 5'2".
She's 5'2", yeah, she's a tiny girl. So yeah, I don't know why, but it made it pop more that she was so tiny. I don't know why I said that, but it hasn't, neither here nor there. I don't know if they're trying to make Ben Affleck taller.
I don't know.
I don't know. But so I like the movie. I like figuring this stuff out. I think there's like three different threads that are going on. One is obviously Christian Wolf, Ben Affleck's character in the movie, his own main thing. There's that whole thing with the Treasury Department. And there's a whole thing with the criminals, this weird side criminals that you don't know what they're there for until almost the end of the second act. And in the meantime, you get some flashes, some flashbacks. Any of those things you guys want to explore more of? Luke, any of those interest you the most?
The lackluster ending?
I didn't. None of those four options were in that. Damn. None of those. What was the four things?
I was pitching my own. Okay.
Oh, you could talk about the now. Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Let's go to the Treasury Department.
It's like, is the answer A, B, or C? Oh, it's F.
Yes.
Yes. So what were you saying?
We could do the whole Treasury Department thing.
Okay. So I'm J.K. Simmons and shit.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons is Ray King. Really stellar name there.
Oh, his name is Ray King?
Ray King.
Oh, I thought he was going to say something. He's raking in the big bucks. So. Something.
Anyway, he makes his assistant.
You have a phone. You don't need a laptop to put. You have a phone on you, man. You look ridiculous.
I can't find her. Anyway, he kind of blackmails his assistant that has like a criminal past into taking
over. What a
over
shitty
his,
move, by the way.
I know, right? To kind of find out who this guy is, Christian Wolf, and, you know, hunt him down. Because he's obviously been dealing with all these bad guys and shit.
True. This is definitely the biggest
very,
B subplot.
True. Like, it's not the real thing.
Yeah. And actually, the biggest problem I have with the movie is with the Treasury stuff. And I'll get to it in a bit. And it's not even a big, big problem. But it's the biggest problem. But overall, I did like that. I didn't like the way he manipulated this girl. I think she was hooked before he said that. Before he gave her the ultimatum of, like, if you don't, I'm going to arrest you. Like, he didn't have to say that. I think she was hooked already with the story he gave her, right?
Yeah.
I don't, like, why do you have to do this? You just did that for being a dick. Like, that's how it felt to me in the moment. Ralph, what did you think of the whole Treasury stuff, the whole plot line?
Well, I always find it funny that, and I kind of plays out a little bit better here than in other movies, but I always find it funny that I was just like, this one person could figure out who this person is because they want to actually look for this person.
Right, as if the Treasury Department isn't filled with clearly, like, studious, background-filled people, you know, with also, you know, ambitions and...
I'm sure someone else has a connection with
the FBI. It's almost like no one's hardworking except for that one person we're seeing.
Exactly. Right. Well, and I get it. I guess they try to do the whole motivation factor of, like, you have to do it or else you're going to get taken.
Well, also, like, they do a lot of work to explain that why nobody else would do it. They do a lot of work to make it seem like only one person can really figure this
sure,
out.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. Like, if you actually dedicate the proper amount of time and resources.
Yeah, a lot of exposition going on.
Yeah,
background.
So I kind of give it its whatever for that, but I kind of like the Treasury. I actually really like it towards the end when J.K. Simmons explains his story, and that was really cool. It explains the story and how he got basically let the guy, the accountant, let him go, and he's like just fucking freaking out. Mm-hmm. And then ever since then, he's been getting all that, you know, all that
the tips.
Exactly.
Did you like the tips stuff, Luke? The whole reveal of J.K. Simmons' character. What's his name in the movie?
Ray King.
Ray King. Okay. Yes. It'll be much easier to say King instead of J.K. Simmons every time. So King, what did you think of the whole thing about him? Reversal. He's not looking for him to punish him. He's looking for him out of curiosity. Did you like that twist?
No.
Okay.
That was just like meh.
I'm with you. Why do you think it was meh?
It just felt like it was kind of tacked on.
Okay.
It's like, here's the real reason why I want this guy. Tack. Okay. Check mark, he's done. Now we know his story.
Yeah, I feel very similar. Like it's a little tacked on because so the movie opens up with technically that scene of him, right?
Right.
The movie opens up with you don't see who it is, but you'll find out it's Ray King actually. But it's this man with a gun going up to this crime scene in progress where all these fucking gun thugs are getting shot left and right and, you know, they're dying and shit and
they're dead. It's all
one person's killing them. You can hear them screaming in the background or pleading for their lives, right? And he's approaching slowly but surely, and then the gun is pointing right behind their head, and then the movie starts, right? And then throughout the course, you know it's Ray King, and you know that it was actually the accountant, Christian Wolf, who did all the murdering, and there was a personal reason, and they explain all that stuff. They go through a lot of trouble again to explain that stuff. They mention the thing with the cell one time just so you can have something to reference to that one time to come back to, which I didn't feel like it was earned enough, emotionally speaking. Like I said, I felt that it was tacked on just to, I don't know if it's to have another twist or because they wanted to have, the main reason I think the whole Ray King storyline exists is to make Ben Affleck a good guy. And in which case, I think I go around this movie and thinking that it's a bad idea to make this guy a good guy to begin with. I think you should have made him the bad guy, like super efficient Terminator that he is. Like, he could still have a moral code, but he's still breaking the law. Why can't I just have law-abiding Treasury Department agents go after lawbreakers? What is wrong with that? You don't have to.
Well, because they would have found them already.
You can have two morally compromising cool people, one anti-hero, one hero, go after each other. You don't have to have them both be heroic at the end. You don't have to make one a good guy or something. Like, not suddenly, obviously. Like I said, it was kind of planned on the head. It was planned enough ahead so I could say, like, okay, it's still cool. Kind of cool to watch. But when you look back on it, I don't think it was very important. And I think it undermines the potential of this movie of dealing with, like, showing us a portrait of a criminal. Now we're showing the portrait of, like a pseudo-crazy angel that does stuff from behind his back and fixes problems, really. And, you know, like, he's doing it for right reasons. Like, it was very weird and ultimately vague because he's still doing a lot of criminal work, but with a code? Does that matter? Why does that matter? And then you start thinking the Treasury Department storyline kind of shouldn't exist anyway. That's how I feel. Like, I went through that rabbit hole of thought processes. I don't know what you guys think.
So, is this criminal? What's this criminal activity?
Well, we're so off. Okay, well, so he fraternizes with you know.
He cooks the books.
Right.
Or he fixes. Actually, he doesn't cook any books. Technically, he just goes and sees where the leak is.
Well, we've only seen him cook one book, right? And that wasn't a cook, you're right. It was a fix. And that was a legitimate fix. So I think the movie lets us to believe that when he's doing crimes for criminals, that he is cooking books as well. Like, yeah, he's fixing their enterprise, but, like, he's clearly aiding and abetting. The girl says it. He's aiding and abetting all these criminal enterprises, and that's what he's doing. Without him, they wouldn't be able to sell drugs more efficiently or whatever, right? So I think he is responsible, and he should be. I'm not saying he should be tried, but I'm saying, though, yeah, he's illegally doing stuff.
Okay.
That's my point. But do you not believe that, Ralph? Or
no, yeah, I get
does
it.
Does that make sense?
No, I get it. Yeah. It's fine. I just want to make sure you guys aren't going to go with the fact that he just murders people, you know?
Oh, but he does murder a lot of fools, though.
Sure, sure.
Well, he murdered some people. We don't know if he's still murdering them. He's just prepping just in case he has to murder more. and that murder, that sounds premeditated. Maybe he has to defend himself.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. A lot of the movies, murdering happens in self-defense. I think
manslaughter, then.
Yeah, that guy is a fucking machine.
He's got a fucking, like, a Gatling gun from his garage.
God, I wish he used it. God, that would have been cool. But then again, that would have turned into...
As Luke turned to me and said, life goals.
Yes.
Really? Is that what you said?
Yes. When I saw the trailer and the gun, I was like, life goals?
The audience should know that out of all of us, you're definitely the gun nuts. And I know that compared to real gun nuts, you're not at all. But yeah, compared to me, I have zero guns where you have like much more than I do. So yeah, that would have been cool to see. It's almost like the Cabin in the Woods thing. Like, you kind of want to see those monsters in action. So yeah. But like I said, like, I think that whole dynamic of making him a criminal or, like, only in self-defense, like, I don't know why they have to go through so much trouble of just, like, just pick. I mean, Bryan Cranston and Breaking Bad was always bad, and we loved watching him. What's wrong with making Ben Affleck?
He was a good man at one point.
I think in the first two episodes he was a good man, and then he wasn't anymore.
He had good intentions.
Yeah, it doesn't make it right. And that would have been a cool thing to watch. It would have been much more nuanced. And it would have been cooler to think about also. It would have made me probably watch the movie again if it focused on simpler things and not to complicate the lifeblood of the story and the movie to make about a good guy and make it more fluffy action movie of the week, which makes it forgettable, Luke, like you and I were kind of saying in the beginning. So I think that's the major fault. And that's the Treasury storyline for me. I think it's the building block of that, right, for me. Anybody else want to add anything to that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Raf? I know you liked it the most, so I don't know if you have, like, a rebuttal.
I mean, I don't know. You know what you want me to say?
I don't know. No, nothing. I guess if you have nothing to say, don't worry about it. Let's talk about the Anna Kendrick stuff, which I had great fears for, but never went that way, thank God.
Where did you feel there's going to be like a romantic?
Oh
thing?
God, yes, I thought it was going to be because
I was hoping just take her shirt off or something.
No,
then it wouldn't have been true to the character.
No, it would never have been true. Yeah, exactly. The guy doesn't even want to be.
What if this looks like just a little bit more?
No. Yeah, exactly. No, I think that was, that was played okay enough. I don't know why he went back though.
I think it's to show that he still kind of has, you know, he can still be more human than just, you know, this crazy accountant guy and just got his own set thing. He can deviate from his norm.
Yeah, but why? To show who?
Pussy is a great motivator.
I would say it's a non-starter for someone who's never cared for it. And
we don't know that.
I think we do know that. What do you believe, Ruff? What do you think?
Well, what's the whole point of the flashbacks then?
What do you mean?
What are the whole point of the flashbacks for the kid? Besides learning, obviously, to fight Krav Maga and all that crazy stuff that he learns, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying, like, he shows that he wants to lead a normal-ish life the whole time, right? In most of the stuff.
But does it? I think his father's forcing that on him.
No, it shows that he wants to. And his father's showing him that you need to train, like, to defend yourself and, like, to... What's it called?
I'm trying to think of a scene that reflects that. I can't think of one. Maybe you can help me.
When him and his brother are fighting that one guy? And they're like, man the fuck up? Keep fighting him?
What in that scene did I miss? I mean, it's possible I missed it. Maybe I just forgot. Shows that he wants to be normal and not just being forced to fight someone?
I mean, basically it's just like he had the thing. He's like, he said, hey, you know, everybody wanted to stop, but he's like, hey, we got to continue on, you know? He knows, like, there's a time and a place, and Papa wants us to fight. We're going to fight.
Okay. Now translate that into what's going on with him and Anna Kendrick.
Pussy is a powerful motivator.
I think where I'm trying to go with is more of the fact that he never had, I guess, from his childhood, he never had control of anything he had, right? Of his disabilities.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Cool. And now that he's in a part in his life where he has control of his disabilities, where he has a routine, he has things going for it. He's trying to see if he can ever venture out into that other world that he never really could, but he always really wanted to. He always wanted to be like his brother, which is, you know, whatever, stuff like that.
No.
And he obviously wanted to be like, he wanted to have that whole mother relationship thing that his mother left. That's the reason the mother left, right? And that he freaks out for. You know, when that whole part where she leaves.
Yeah, and the brother goes to the window, flicks her off.
Yeah, the brother's awesome for flicking her off.
Yeah.
And you have that whole part where just like he's like learning basically the whole time and but he doesn't know because he never was able to have that connection. You know, even when he goes to the special house, right. Mm-hmm. And he makes that puzzle and he makes the lifelong friend.
My God. I had a horrible joke when that scene came up.
So like even that, like had he have gone there, he would have been able to, like, probably lead a more normal life, not this crazy accountant thing that he's got going, because he would have probably never learned how to fight or anything like that, but he would have been able to lead a life inside our normal boundaries, I guess, and not have been, like, where her stage is, where she's just permanently stuck in that house. So, yeah, I think the whole normalcy has always been there. He's always wanted to have some kind of relation. He just never knew how to deal with it. So now that he sees somebody like him in the real world, right? Another accountant, only a female version, right? And it's also something that was kind of brought into him, right? He wasn't brought into the accountant thing. He learned that in prison, right?
Well, at least the criminal part.
Well, you're right.
It was always a math whiz.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, so, like, it's just... that's the way I saw it. I didn't see it as much of, like, he's trying to sort of lead and like, push himself to be normalish, I guess. That's the way I see that.
No, I mean, like I said, it was convincing enough, but that does make sense. I'll go with that. That's a good traction. But way better than mine, which is, like, just nothing.
Right. Way better than Luke's, is just pussy, so...
Yeah, because it wasn't that. If anything, it was definitely not pussy.
Look, because if it was that, they would have had sex in that expensive-ass hotel.
And he should have.
Sure, he should have.
You pretty much have to at that point.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's a pretty expensive hotel.
Or when he gets you a fucking original Pollock, you pretty much have to.
You know who Pollock is. Was? He's dead.
He makes a fancy art.
Car crash, though. That guy was nuts, though. Is that movie? I mean, I'm not really into Anna Kendrick, so I didn't give a shit. She's tiny. She's 5'2".
Oh, yeah.
She's tiny. Jesus. Anyway, the worst. Yeah, okay, I kind of agree with that. I liked how they ended. I mean, that's fine. Like, he gets
rid of... Oh, credits?
Yeah, that's my line. That's cute. That's cute. I'm running off on you. No. With the Anna Kendrick storyline. You know, like, it never came back. You know, she'll always wonder, and it's not that kind of movie. And the movie treats it just enough.
Yeah, there's a total lack of closure. I'm not a fan of that either.
Mm-hmm. That's not what I said at all. Next up is the brother thing. The last part, I guess, of the movie.
Oh, so fucking predictable.
That part, that fucking predictable? Yeah. Did you predict
it? So it was so predictable from the moment you saw the guy, that how predictable it was? That's how predictable you're making it sound like.
No, but
it's not that fucking predictable.
God damn, he got you.
I was like halfway through the movie, I'm like, yeah, it's probably the brothers.
Do you have scratches on your face?
Yeah. I'm like, yep, they're
no
brothers.
Means no.
Shut up.
Why is it, well, how predictable was it? What, is this a bothersome thing?
It was pretty blatantly obvious.
I think it was that obvious.
I thought it was.
I mean, I did get it, but I didn't get it like
sure,
scene
I got
one.
It too. I'm not saying either.
I got like scene three of him or
but
something.
But I never thought it was him maybe until after the fact that it was...
like that's more...
He shoots at him, for
put it
example.
This way. There is right. not enough information... Okay, there is not enough information except for thematically that the movie presents that you can figure out that that's his brother. Because if you do figure it out before... it's just a leap. It's just like a leap of faith. It's not like it's grounded in evidence that was shown before and foreshadowing
is
other
it's
ways.
It's like if
other
you knew the penitent man kneeled before God.
Yeah, like if you knew the penitent man, you would know he was gonna fucking kneel. But if you don't know it, it's a nice surprise. But it's cool if you know the information. There is no information to know about this brother thing, so it just comes up as out of
well,
nowhere.
You know he has a brother, and you didn't ever.
What I'm saying
is
a genuine twist. It's just a pure twist without anything on it, with no background.
And I know nothing of this penitent man.
Wow. Indiana Jones reference, bro.
Dude,
Indiana
Jones.
Jones.
Indy.
No.
We named the dog Indiana.
No.
You were named after the dog?
I seen those movies like once and I didn't care for them.
This is what's wrong.
And that's my last podcast ever, guys. Y'all yep. have a good one.
I think I'll quit too.
Tune in next week.
for a static. That static show.
You guys know this.
Static Shock?
Indiana Jones is overrated.
That's what I say about Star Wars and Lord of the Rings.
Indiana Jones is better than both those series.
I agree. I like Indiana Jones.
Better at sucking.
Pussy. This is terrible. Such a guy thing we're doing now. Oh, I hate it. All right. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, the obviousness.
We're talking. I was
so I think,
I think
it's more like
done with this movie.
No. Yeah, one more thing about the brother thing. It's the twist thing. The twist thing. I just got that. I can't hear you very well
how did
from
you
with
get
the headphones.
There?
Yeah, how did
just
you
one
get
more
there?
Thing. So stupid.
So stupid.
Sorry.
The twist thing is that it does purposely come out of nowhere. I think it's the only twist that really isn't earned. But it's the coolest to watch. Yeah. And
what's really cool about that twist, at least for me, mm-hmm. is the fact that like his brother just does not give a fuck about what happens to the client after that. Like,
because family is forever, whatever the hell his father told him.
Sure, whatever. I mean, it's just his brother.
But even if they hate each other, you still don't give a shit about the client after
right,
that,
exactly.
right? After that reveal.
Yeah, look, your check cleared already. I don't care what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of my guys are dead. I ain't gonna pay them anymore. So.
Also,
I'm gonna kill him just in case.
All of his guys were dead.
Here's something that I think the movie was maybe trying to say about that client, John Lithgow. His character in that movie. And
go back to Third Rock from the
side. Or Dexter season. Third Rock's better. Is that so? He takes the legitimate deal just to keep away from the. From the possible heat he'll get from all the criminal stuff he usually does, right? That's what the girl says on the thing. By the way, no, that's the best reveal. It's in the credit. Better than the brother reveal was that the girl that was talking to him was the girl from the orphanage or whatever. Sorry.
Saw that coming immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it coming too, but that was the coolest one. Because that one felt much more earned. than the brother one. Anyway.
Yeah, that one did feel.
What I was going to say about that is that the is it funny that is the movie trying to say something of the fact that the one job he does that's going legitimate is the one that gives him the most trouble and the most illegal shit, and the one he has to kill a lot more people than usual. He killed more people with this John Lithgow legitimate robotics company. Legit. You know, than with that Gambino crew in the beginning of the movie over
that. Right, and they hit that whole. Well, he did that for personal reasons.
Yeah, but he still killed less people.
But he, they even hint at it in the movie. Like the whole one line thing is just like, he's like, well, why don't we try doing an honorable job or an honest job, right? And he's like, I prefer of like honor among thieves. You know, like we don't we're not going to kill each other. They need me. I need them.
Yeah, I know.
Everything's out of the open. We're good.
Whereas like, John Lithgow doesn't know that yet. Doesn't know that stupid lesson. So I have to kill him and his goons. It's going to be annoying. I'm going to break a nail. I get it. No, you're right. I just think it's funny. I don't know if the movie's trying to say something.
I agree.
It's definitely, if it's trying something, it fails because it doesn't do enough good of a job.
Sure.
But it's enough there to be asked that question.
And Ron.
All right. That's it for The Accountant, right? I assume nobody else has anything. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back after this clip for the next film review, we shall review, what is the name of that movie? The Girl on the Train. So, stay with us, won't you?
I saw someone with Megan Hipwell, but not on Friday night. She was having an affair. She had a lover. That's what I'm trying to tell
you. I thought you didn't know her.
No, but I saw her.
You saw her where?
I saw her from the train. She was standing on the deck with this man.
With her husband, Scott Hipwell?
No, it wasn't him. This man was different, and they were kissing.
Wow, that's pretty coincidental, isn't it? You just happened to be on a train at the same exact moment that a woman you don't know but somehow recognize is cheating on her husband?
I know it sounds crazy.
Neighbor saw a drunk woman in the vicinity of her house Friday night. Megan Hipwell does bear a resemblance to Anna Watson. Mrs. Watson reported that you go to their house sometimes uninvited, and that on one occasion you actually broke in and took their child.
A divorcee becomes entangled in a missing persons investigation that promises to send shockwaves throughout her life.
I believe it said divorcee.
Hey.
Did you say divorcee?
Divorcee.
Okay. You said it so nonchalant.
Who does this star? Who directs this movie?
People. I didn't see this fucking movie.
Oh my god, come on.
Stars Emily Blunt. She's very blunt.
This is a show where
Bennett,
they find out they miss my
Rebecca
posting.
Ferguson, Justin something, and Luke Evans, and some guy named Edgar. Everyone else is kind of just there.
Okay, well, I'll take that.
All right. Directed by Tate Taylor.
Tate Taylor?
I know, he was famous in school.
Right. Didn't they call them Tay-Tay?
Tay-Tay.
For
the initials.
Yeah.
He did that Get On Up movie, which is pretty good. You like that? It's a biopic, musical biopic.
Wait, Get On Up or Get On Down?
Get On Up.
Oh, the Get Down is a show on Netflix. Never mind. Huh?
Yeah, that's by Baz Luhrmann, right?
I think so. I'm not too
There's
sure.
There's another musical. Why am I talking? I'm not hosting this particular segment.
I'm waiting for Luke to start saying
that's
something.
That's true. He did choose this movie.
He chose this movie.
Oh, yes, because the only reason I chose this movie because you guys didn't see Snowden. So,
No, this was your backup regardless.
Yeah, because you guys didn't want to see Snowden. All right, so anyway. Movie stars Emily Blunt, who is a...
woman?
Unemployed, drunk, who happens to be on a train every single day that looks at the old street she used to live on and kind of sees into the lives of these two people, Scott and Megan. And they have like the seemingly
Such a
perfect
white
life.
Ass fucking names.
I know. And they have the seemingly perfect life, and they're always like getting
I'm Scott
their freak
White.
On.
No, wait, I'm Megan White. Sorry.
Shut up. Anyway, two houses from there is her ex-husband and his new wife, who she was cheated on with, so kind of resenting this over there. And one day she happens to see Megan with another man. And then that night she gets killed. And she was blackout drunk. Nobody knows what actually happens to her. Dun, dun, dun.
Indubitably.
Yes. So, did you like this one?
Overall, I don't think I can say I liked it. I didn't.
Thank
but
God.
I didn't hate it. Like, I didn't. So, this is the same person or whatever that did a book, right? For, what's, no?
It has that vibe.
Gone Girl, right?
It had that vibe.
It has that Gone Girl vibe. It totally has that Gone Girl vibe.
It's a different writer. At first I thought so too, but it's not it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Because Gone Girl was actually decent. This is not.
And also, you gotta realize that the author of that book wrote the screenplay for Gone Girl for her own movie, too.
Right.
So this is different. Sure. It's not written by the same.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's always the case either. Like, those could be mad, too. But, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones where George R. R. Martin gets to write an episode here and there.
Right, exactly. No, no, I get it. I get it. I was just wondering. I thought it was because it does, totally has that vibe, like Luke was saying. What I do like about this movie, and I would say it's probably the first hour, is Emily Blunt. I really like her acting in it. Her whole, like, she plays this drunken, distressed person very well. But after that, it gets really fucking annoying. And I can't stand her character anymore.
Right, she's so... But, okay, I will give her redemption, though, like...
One day of sobriety?
How she actually got into this thing was because the manipulation she was under...
And that was actually a really good
thing. That was like
the
best twist of the movie was the manipulation.
Yeah.
Because you thought, oh, this is just a drunk dumbass. No wonder her husband left her and was banging some hot blonde on the side. Because, yeah, she, obviously, if she's drunk and wrecking shit in his life. Yeah.
So I have a problem with this movie. And the biggest problem I have is the movie's called Girl on the Train, right? And I guess the book. It was a book, right?
Yeah.
Also? Okay. So.
Same title, yes.
Sure, sure. And now I don't know how the book goes. Right, but to my understanding is we're following
usually this from left to right.
We're following this person, right? Not in Japan. So, what's it called? We're following this person, and we should follow only this person. And I'm pretty sure the book doesn't do that because it right. follows everything. But it kind of fucks up the movie for me because the movie
It goes back in time and forward in time.
It does a whole like today, 4 months ago. 2 months ago.
Is it like that show about the bank heist? You know what I'm talking about? The bank heist and all the whole every episode is like takes a different perspective of this bank heist that happened. So the whole season is the same one tragedy told through like infinite perspectives.
Well, in this one what they do is and they do it the movie way, which is should be done, which is like she has a tragedy and as something comes up, they'll go back to the past and explain like something that happened. So, like, it makes sort of sense.
It goes back and forth but between people. So it's like...
But it, exactly.
Now you have Tom. And now you have Megan. Now you have Anna. Now you have Scott.
So you're seeing everybody's perspective through this... Of this thing. So... And I thought... I liked the movie a lot in the beginning because a lot of the beginning is almost all Emily Blunt's
character.
Pretty
much linear, yeah.
It's very linear. Very, very her. And you're like, that's cool because... I'd rather see it only through her perspective and then come out at the end and be like, and then maybe you can show me some stuff at the end, right?
Maybe there's like a lack of intimacy because they shift around too much. They should just stay with her.
I guess.
It would have felt more
personal. It is her like 80% of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
But it like those shifts back and forth, it just happens a lot, very too frequent, I guess. And
so the movie should have been called The Girl on the Train?
No. So the whole thing is like she loses her, she basically, which is what Luke said is like the twist is, She becomes a drunk, right?
Right.
And
becomes or is already?
No, she becomes. She becomes an alcoholic.
The, yeah, because of the because divorce.
She, yeah, because she gets
can't
divorced.
Have kids.
Stuff like that, right? So, and due to that fact, we notice that she's, what's it called? She can't...
play drugs.
She loses everything, but she obviously worked really well enough to where whatever she would make, and pension-wise... She or not pension, but like 401k. I'm pretty sure she cashed out a long time ago. That she just has money left over still because she's using
no alimony.
Money. Alimony. That's what
her sister said. Is this what you wish? Alimony? Because she's been fired. She got a divorce 2 years ago, apparently, and for the last year she got fired, and even her sister didn't know that.
Yeah,
and she was like staying at her apartment,
paying
like,
rent though.
Yeah, paying rent. She's like, "This is what you wish your alimony on? Taking the train back and forth from New York."
That's all she would do,
just to watch your ex-husband.
She would get dressed up to go to work, like if she was going to work, and she would go to work like commuters with everybody else on the train.
Yeah,
and then she would.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing she would go to work on is a bottle of vodka,
or yeah, anywhere else, bar or whatever, and then she'd come back home. That's it, and then she would watch exactly what he said. Watch The Neighbors.
What a waste of time. Go do something. Go
well, he
hobby.
Was just... Well, she's pining. Yeah,
no, I'm kidding, guys.
Right. She's pining over the... Right?
How but, can I assume?
Like, she thinks she's a horrible person.
And the whole reason... The only reason she even, like, pays attention to this person is that she sees Megan every ride. Every ride she sees her outside. At least in the day, right. if not at
night. And she doesn't even know her name. She gives her different names every time.
Yeah, she just comes
and
up.
And makes up their life.
Yeah, because she's drunk all the time. So she's like, oh my God, I'm just wondering what their life would be. Because they look so
perfect
together.
Her name is Amber
together.
Today. She's doing this, this, and this.
Hmm.
So
today it's Rachel.
It's interesting. So what ends up happening is she gets... I just don't want to explain the whole movie to you, but...
No, it's fine. Just pretend like you're reviewing it amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
I am not here.
So, like, your presence.
What I'm surprised is, like, heavy. That video that no one ever saw that she took.
Right. So, basically, so she gets drunk as shit. She records the video with some girl. It's like, oh, we hate Anna or whatever. You know, she's like, oh, if I had the chance, blah, blah, blah.
I hate that bitch, too.
Yeah, she talks about how you had this great thing and you fucked it all up. I would go and I would, like, bash your head into the fucking ground.
And right, and she
that night,
yeah.
Megan disappears.
Megan disappears. Right. And I guess that's a hint in the movie, right? To show that, like, her mind's being fucked with. Because she visualizes, right?
Right. And then, like...
And she makes herself believe...
Yeah, because the next week when they find the body and it was already decomposing, they said it was due to blunt force trauma to the head. And then she has like this like vision of her going into that house, grabbing her from behind and just smashing her head into the ground.
Oh. I don't know. But okay, let's go with... Because like I said, the first half of the movie is really good. Or not really good, but just good. Good. And like the second half when all the stuff's going on and everything in between... Did you feel that at the end of the movie, like, the big twist, did you feel like, besides that she was being forced, like, did you find it believable that this guy could do that? Like, all of the things that he did? Like, and
Tom?
Is that his name?
Tom.
Yeah. Like, he was just a piece of shit from the beginning, from the get-go.
Yeah, but at first you didn't notice until...
Right, but you never noticed it also at present time.
Right.
You never noticed how much of a POS he is the whole time.
Yeah, so they play that off really well, because obviously they have to.
Yeah, I think if the movie didn't put that off at all, it would fuck up the whole movie. Because
Basically, there was one key scene where, before she gets divorced, she's at a dinner party with her husband, and apparently there's like some tray of deviled eggs she brings out, and she's like taking the eggs, and she's like throwing them at like the boss's wife, and like takes the plate and shatters it all across. And when they're walking back home, the guy's like, you know, you probably just got me fired. What the hell's wrong with you? And all this shit. 2 years down the line, she sees that lady on the train and tells her, like, hey, I'm so sorry about what happened at the party. And she's like, what are you talking about? You know, you got a little sick and you went to lay down. She's like, that's not what happened. And then she kind of remembered it. It was her husband gave her these ideas when she kind of like blacked out. This is what you did. You embarrassed me in front of my coworkers. Now I'm fired. When in reality, he was just fucking everybody in the office. Couldn't keep his dick in his pants. But
yeah,
he blamed it on her.
Right, of course. Yeah, I just felt like her whole... I didn't get where the time was going because we're switching so much back and forth between the 4 months and the 2 months and then today. The today part where from she sees the murder... she sees that she goes missing to where they find out that where they managed to reveal everything. How that I don't get time, sense of time. I don't know if it's a week. I don't know if it's a couple of days. I don't know if it's
right because you know they find the body after a week, and then after that, it's like how many days has passed?
Yeah, it's just weird. It's and I just feel like she's taking it day by day because she tries to stop drinking but doesn't.
Fails in like the first day,
right? Exactly. I don't know. And then overall, the characters, I don't think we needed to find out anything about Megan. Did you think we needed to find out stuff about Megan?
No, it was just like, oh, I'm just an empty vessel. I'm this, this, and this. I'm just so bored with life.
It's I just like, felt like they did that because...
you privileged bitch.
Right, well, that'd be her whole death thing with her kid.
Oh, that was kind of fucked up.
Not kind of fucked up. That was completely fucked up.
Ooh, right, so. What was fucked up?
Okay, so this part was... She didn't want to have a kid with the guy she was with, Scott. And then you find out when she was like 17.
Yeah, Scott Whiteman.
she was like 17 or 18. Her brother, who passed away for whatever, for some reason, his best friend, she was hooking up with him, and they lived in some shitty cabin in the woods. And they had a child together. And one rainy day, it was cold, so she drew a bath with her and the child. And she had the child with her in the tub. And the child was on top of her. She fell asleep, and the child like drifted off into the water and drowned. And she woke up, and the child was there. She took it out, and she just, I think, wrapped it in something and buried it.
Rather than a blanket, yeah.
Yeah. And then that guy, when he came back, found out what happened. He just left and never saw her again.
Right.
Well, I'm not. Don't blame the guy right now, honestly. That's yeah, it's that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
the skeleton in your closet,
literally,
or the backyard.
Yeah. So, and then she had the they lived in the cabin. She had the baby there by herself and everything. I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess there's no ever report of the baby being born.
Gotcha.
No
baby bracelet.
Right, exactly. Yeah, like, I just felt that they added that whole thing to the movie for us to feel something for this person that went missing. But in reality, we're supposed to feel everything through Emily Blunt's point of view. And it felt like we did it to see more expose on this person, her and the psychiatrist. And
yeah, that was another one, like her going to the psychiatrist.
Right. It just felt like we had a lot more backstory on Megan than we needed to, but because they wanted us to make us feel something for her gone missing. But at the same time, the movie is heavily influencing it on the fact that we should be feeling either bad or good for this drunk divorcee.
Right.
Because at first you're just like, no, she's scum, right? But right. Even through her perspective in the past, she basically made her whole, what's it called, her whole marriage, she fucked it up after the fact that she couldn't have kids, she drank too much, apparently she was very abusive with everybody and stuff like that, so, and with her husband as well, like she broke things and shit, you know, like she pushed him away, that's basically what it was, according to her, right? And then we ended up finding out the truth that it was just him feeding lies to her, that she was really down, and he kind of like made her into an alcoholic and made her black out all the time, and blamed her on everything so he could basically leave her and have a relations with some other person, and like leave kind of like on a clean slate, like without.
So what? So what is this movie about? Is it about? Is it about alcoholism? Is it about like the devaluing of women or something like that? Is it the power struggle thing? What is this movie thematically about? It can't be just about this murder, is it? It's not that point blank. It's about the girl who sees the murder, sort of, doesn't, you know?
Right? I guess it's about her and it's kind of like discovering the truth in like this case and in her life.
So is it just really point blank? It's nothing.
It's more about emotional abuse.
Okay. Yeah, that was a big thing.
The big thing is about emotional abuse and how one can be abused and to the extent of how one can be abused in any, no matter what type of relationship you're in.
Right,
and
yeah,
you see that, that's the theme of the movie, basically, because she gets emotionally abused by her husband the whole time.
Right.
And he abuses, obviously, his other wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even the husband of Megan, right, emotionally abuses her as well,
mm-hmm.
right? Because like kind of like for because he wants a family, and she like always is like, you need to have like we want a family, blah blah blah. Why can't we get pregnant? And she doesn't want to because of obviously she has a kid that they
right the whole Woods thing, yeah.
Shit that we didn't need to know. We didn't care. She died. Like I'm sorry. Like it should have just been.
It's a fake character. Don't be sorry.
Right.
A fake character.
So although she was pretty hot, what's it called? So that's the whole thing, and how emotional abuse kind of can come, what it can lead you to. And like, how do you get out? How do you get away from that? Like the big reveal for that is a psychiatrist part for that. And I guess that's one of the reasons you have the psychiatrist there for it, to have like, because she has this moment of clarity where she like brings up like, I did this, I did all these bad things,
mm-hmm.
and then he's like, yeah, like you're, like I get it, you did bad things and stuff like that. He's like, but where does this stem from? Where does it come from? Like, do you think you were being mistreated, misabused, or whatever stuff like that? So you get to see it. That's the main theme I would say for the movie. That it does kind of follow a lot, obviously, with the whole Luke said, which is the point of the movie, right? The murder mystery.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I just wanted to make sure because you guys were saying a lot of things like, is it a bar?
Is how like one copes with this crazy stuff?
No, yeah, it doesn't sound very good. Very it sounds.
Yeah, like I said, just kind of the end. It just kind of like mixes way too much back and forth. You get a lot of stuff going on. I get why they had to do it, but at the same time, I just felt like I was really heavy-handed on that whole Megan stuff. Like, she had to be this damaged girl, ultra everything bad about her. She had to be an empty vessel, didn't care about her life, just cheated on her husband.
Who was that poet that put her head in the oven?
I'm not too sure.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Feels like that.
Right. I just
shouldn't know the name.
To the extent, dude. Yeah. I just felt like her character was just like all... everything out there about her, and I was like, oh my god, okay, like
right on,
everybody has to be super damaged, broken somewhere. Oh my fuck. It's just so annoying.
So anything else in this movie,
dude? This is a like, it's not as bad as Gone Girl, where you would go, like, don't take your significant other to it.
Oh.
Right?
Like, I know Gone it Girl, looks you, like that, but I don't think, is it like that, though?
Like, the way you, yeah, because it portrays this guy, even the nicest guy, is the biggest dick in the world.
Okay,
or
yeah.
Can be the biggest dick in the world. So, like,
it's a little
like
biased.
You're emotionally abusing me all the time. Like, the all the guys are bad in this book.
Gotcha. So. Okay. You feel the same?
Yeah, if you want to watch a movie, just watch Gone Girl. Fuck this shit.
Wow.
Yeah, Gone Girl just gives your significant other ideas.
Well,
of how to
that's
kill you.
Even if it's the same.
Gone Girl
thematically,
just bitches be crazy.
But, like, Dave Finch is a way better director. You know, that movie's crafted way better. I think that's really the thing we're talking about in differences here.
Right.
I haven't seen it yet, but.
But it's a very super similar vibe. Okay. The theater I went to, I know Luke said he went with
I think
a bunch of old people,
based
right?
on that alone, even if yes. you guys aren't so hot on it, I think I'll watch it anyway. Anything else on the movie? Cool. So that oh, is...
Nope.
Yeah, I have one other thing. Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Emily Blunt looks like she has, like, the weirdest peeling skin problem ever. Like, her face is always red because of the alcohol and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
Like, it's just, she looks like everything's dry. Like, you could just peel her skin off and you're like, oh, it looks really weird.
Her lips are, like, very dry, too. And like
very
was, like,
chapped and everything.
You need some chapstick.
Like, you need chapstick. Like, you know what? Just drink some water. Maybe you'll be fine. Like... And it plays her off really well. I really do like Emily Blunt in the movie.
I heard that she's the best thing about it, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's The Girl on the Train, currently in theaters right now. You can catch it there. Sort of a mixed recommendation to a no, but that's okay. We're going to take a quick break. After this clip, we will be reviewing our last film of the evening, which is Yoga Hosers. And if you don't know anything about that movie, go check it out on Amazon before you hear the review, or hear the review first for sure. And then decide whether or not to review or check it out on Amazon.
I watch it first.
I don't think so. Stay with us.
Saturn, two-legged dog, and he's in his little push cart, his little makeshift wheelbarrow, and he's pushing himself along. We push right into lotus position, and we feel positive energy all around us. And let's hold on to that positive energy in the room. But, you know, I did read on the message boards at CanadianCorpses.com that they've been finding body parts all over Winnipeg for the last few months.
Body parts?
Oh, yeah. Arms, legs, heads, scalps, torsos, feet, hands, nipples, dinkies.
Dinkies?
Oh. I said take my dinky first, but leave me my nipples.
Two teenage yoga enthusiasts team up with a legendary manhunter to battle with an ancient evil presence that is threatening their major party plans.
Threatening, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Who wrote and directed this film, Luke?
The one and only Kevin Smith.
I'm pretty sure that's not true.
Before we carry on, I believe since this show is new anyway, and this is like not the first auteur that we're reviewing, but it's the first of this caliber, I want to say. By caliber, I mean just big. Kevin Smith has been around our lives. We've seen his movies almost from the get-go, right?
Oh, yeah.
Since Clerks. So it's as if I were to say we hold his films in high regard to some extent, or we did at some point.
Yes.
Ruff?
I still think Chasing Amy is my favorite movie.
You mean of all time or his?
It's like top five of all time.
Nice. Ruff?
I would agree. Not about the Chasing Amy thing, although I sort of agree. But I do agree about Kevin Smith.
Yeah, it's a very good movie, Chasing Amy. Considering that it has a subject material that doesn't befit a man who's heterosexual to write and direct, but he did it. watch it. Kids, ask your parents. So, there's definitely been a strange career with the man, especially with his Smodcast. I think that's a big influence when we talk about this particular film, because it has to do with, obviously, the production company helped with it and whatever the hell. I know in the intro I did that. And this is sort of a spin-off, like a weird spin-off from the movie Tusk, which came out 2 years ago, I want to say, right? 2 years ago?
It takes place in the same realm.
In the same realm, but the movie came out two years ago. As I'm saying, the movie came out 2 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's like about a podcaster that, you know, that's an asshole and turns into this walrus, essentially. And based on that, and they do a spin-off on this particular movie, which is his own version of Clerks with two girls instead of two men, and instead of United States, it's in Canada. So, Yoga Hosers. Did anybody know anything going into it before watching it?
curious. I just knew it was going to take place in the same Canada universe.
Right, you knew that.
And I think it's going to be like a trilogy. He's making another Canada movie.
Hmm. Is there a thing with that? Is he getting some crazy tax break on that or something?
I don't know. I think he just really likes Canada.
Yeah, he does.
I know he's into hockey.
Yes, he is.
But I don't know if that means the same thing, right? Necessarily. I know it could mean the same, but it doesn't necessarily have to, right? People can love hockey here and not go to Canada, right?
Exactly.
So I'm not sure if it's more than that, is my point. All right, so let's get into the movie, I guess. Now we have some little background there. I'm just trying to avoid to talk about this movie because this is going to be it's gonna be a rough one, boys. It's going to be rough.
Let me start this off.
Yeah, please do.
This is not the Kevin Smith movie we need. It's not the Kevin Smith movie we want.
You're kidding me. Are you going with this?
This is the movie we got, and it's not great.
Well, I thought you were going to say this is the movie we deserve.
No, God, no.
That's what the saying usually leads to. I thought you were quoting something.
I know what I was.
I thought you were making...
This is the movie we got. We can face it. Mm-hmm. We can say, hey, it's not his best. It's far from it. It's probably his lowest.
I think I like Cop Out better.
It's his lowest. I would probably watch Cop Out over this.
Yeah. And that movie was really
bad. But hey, it's still... I watched it. It is what it is. I might watch it again. If it's $5 on a Blu-ray one day, hey, I'll pick it up.
If he makes it, yeah.
Every time I think about Cop Out, I just wish Tracy Morgan yells out, Liz Lemon! But he never does.
Well, no. Well, just watch 30 Rock. He says it like 50 times
per season.
So, yeah. I'm in agreement with that sentiment, Lucas. The one we got, and I think, you know, it's almost like, that's all you can say about it. But nope, this is a film podcast. We review films here. So we're gonna fucking rip it up, tear it a new asshole, so to speak, crush it like the little sausage Nazis that they are a little bit here. But just to make sure, because we haven't gotten round robin completely here, Roth, how did you feel about this movie?
Loved it. Every minute of it. I mean...
What's your favorite scene? The stick scene? Is it the stick?
Exactly. No. Yeah, it's a rough movie, for sure. There's a lot. Just does not need to be there. A lot of it does not make sense. It's kind of hard to... I was distracted almost the whole time watching the movie on my phone because it was just not that important to watch. Like, it did not attract me to watch this movie. Sadly. Because I do hold Kevin Smith in high regard. I do like some aspects of the movie. I do like some stuff, and I will talk to them about that. But I would say, yes, I could probably wholeheartedly say this is probably his worst movie. But I've never seen, what's that one, Gigli, or not Gigli, the other movie that he did? The one with Ben Affleck.
Jersey Girl.
I've never seen Jersey Girl. From start to finish.
I mean, that's fucking Citizen Kane compared to this.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people like to rag on that movie because Jennifer Lopez is in the beginning of that movie and there's a whole dumping scene which is very much in the same vein of Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez's life. What?
The third movie from Kevin Smith is going to be called Moose Jaws.
Nobody cared.
Like Jaws, but with a moose.
Yeah.
That's the tagline.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, this is not unlike M. Night Shyamalan's career when he was going off the deep end. And by the deep end, I mean when he started doing a string of films that nobody really agreed with.
Pretty big difference, though. M. Night Shyamalan did, like, 4 movies, and then after that, he's just like, I'm in the deep end, guys.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, I know, like, whereas Kevin Smith did, like, maybe 7 movies.
Right. And then the difference
And some of them
also
were clunkers, but not big clunkers like this.
And then the difference is that Kevin Smith always stuck to doing whatever he wanted to do compared to, like...
He was into the studio.
It didn't feel like... Compared to M. Night Shyamalan, M. Night Shyamalan was like, I did Avatar, and I'm going to do, or The Last Airbender, and I'm going to do my own rendition of it, or whatever, and then you fucked it up, the whole thing.
Well, here's the thing, is that I do think you're, I think they're actually very similar. I think that Kevin Smith does his own thing, but he has to do it on a lower key, because also his humor is a little more lower key, doesn't need a big whole budget, right? I mean, he can, but he doesn't need it. Whereas M. Night Shyamalan had it both ways, I think. He was in the Hollywood system, but he could do anything he wanted in it. He was so big, guys. You remember how big he was?
I remember.
I mean, if I remember correctly, they were calling him the next Steven Spielberg when he made The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, that's what they were calling him. Yeah, they were, yeah.
So that's how...
Icarus, bro. Icarus.
Right? I mean, Unbreakable is still my favorite movie of his. for many. This is the second film, his sophomore effort. But after that, you're right. It does go a little less and a little less, a little less. The Science is the biggest blockbuster he hit, for sure. But definitely those three are the top three for him.
What about The Lady in the Water? You love that one.
I thought I did.
Oh, thank God.
I thought I did. No, there are things about it that I like still.
Yeah, the ending.
But
when that guy works out his one arm. Yeah.
That's funny.
Credits rolled.
Yeah, that's my line. That's twice with the line. I mean, it's fine, but I'm just saying, credit due.
Calm down there, Oscar Jr.
Yeah, what the fuck? Oh, hello, Oscar J. Did you do your homework? I guess not.
I mean, he is old enough to be your dad.
Damn. I don't care how old
he is. Someone must be that old people in the theater today opening cans of soda loud as fuck.
I'm like that, except the loud part. The loud part. Not loud.
it's like they went right to your ear.
That's how they are, though, man. Old people in movie theaters, they don't fucking stop talking. They keep narrating the movie as it's going. It's fucking weird. But whatever. It's fine. Okay, let's stop talking about Kevin Smith behind this movie. Let's just talk about the movie itself. So it stars who again? I forget their names because they're all hyphenated.
These are Kevin Smith's
daughter.
They're
both Colleens.
No, the real names, the actresses.
Oh, yeah. Lily Rose Depp, Johnny Depp's daughter, and Harley Quinn Smith, Kevin Smith's daughter.
So he clearly likes Batman, huh? Or Batman comics. Okay. And so let's talk about these two actors, because they're the main, they're in every scene. What do we think of these two young, blushing new actresses? Do they hold the film for you in any capacity? Or at least...
I felt weird watching them, especially Harley Quinn Smith, because I felt like she was really over-sexualized in this movie. Like, always wearing something pretty revealing, especially for her boobs. And I was like, she's kind of like 15, so... Why is he showing
Oh, how old
this?
Are they? Are they actually?
I think they're like 17.
Yeah, right. I thought like they seem 17 to me, but I don't know. Is that a bigger deal in Canada? I also don't know how that works over there.
That's weird, like,
I'm not going to judge a culture because I don't care. I mean,
if I'm like a director, why am I going to put my daughter out there like that?
Well, I mean, there are worse things out there. Let's put it that way.
Woody Allen.
No, I'm kidding. He never did that to his actors like that. I don't think. I hope not. But no. Anyway, so I think that ultimately, I mean, to say that they're miscast is like saying, well, the movie wouldn't exist if they didn't have these kids. So, like, it goes both ways. That's how it feels like. It feels like a personal project that should have never been aired. It's like they made a movie for themselves.
That's what it feels like. It's like, hey, I'm going to shoot this movie
Now they're making money off us. It feels wrong because this movie doesn't belong to anyone but their family, the Depp family and the Smith family. That's how it feels like to me.
I would agree with you there.
Yeah.
But I think it belongs to the fans of their podcast. And I stopped listening to their podcast as frequent as I used to.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the stuff that you see is like a lot of the ideas or almost everything spawned from there and came to fruition because of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The many podcasts that he does.
I know he does a lot. Can you see? Yeah. You're sorry.
So that being said, it's like it was made for those people. So that family, per se, like their family, their immediate families, right? Those people, the Depps and the Smiths.
And I'm sure they had fun, tons of fun making this movie.
I'm pretty sure they did, yeah.
They look like they had fun.
It does.
Because nothing makes sense.
Exactly. But at the same time, it's like, it's that family for them. Like, that it also is like, oh, it's for our fans. So it's like the Veronica Mars movie. Like, would that be, all the difference is, like, that could probably still hold
up. But you could follow that movie.
Exactly. Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean... you don't love the characters the same way, for sure, if you're not a fan, but you can follow that movie, right? Now, Ralph, let's say put you in a situation. If you were the podcast fan and you knew all these things that were going to come up reference-wise, like maybe people wrote in, oh, do crazy sausage Nazi people.
I might find it funnier.
Would you? Yeah, I was going to say.
Find it funnier, and I might have enjoyed it a little bit more, but I would still think it's pretty out there.
Pretty out there. Like,
and that's why
bad
probably,
out there, you mean?
Bad, yeah.
Because
yeah.
Swiss Army Man's pretty out there, but that's a good movie.
Sure. Right? But like, that's the difference it's also with... what's the difference between...
That is an amazing movie, Luke. You're right. That's a proper use of that word.
Fuck you.
That's the difference between... what's it called? What's that other movie? The Walrus one that we just...
Tusk.
Tusk.
The Tuscany.
Like, I knew about the Tusk stuff. I didn't know anything about the Yoga Hoser one. Like,
right, that came after you stopped listening, right?
Right, yes. Right. But I know about the Tusk one.
Did that enhance your likable...
I did like Tusk more because of that.
I know that when we were doing that podcast, we did... That was a big point in our review. You You were talking about that a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did like Tusk more because of that. Now, I also thought Tusk wasn't as bad as you didn't. You, like, you hated it.
Yeah, I had a... Yeah.
Sure. I didn't think it was that bad. Now, I didn't think it was great either. I can tell you this has faults for sure. But I still thought it was pretty cool. I especially liked how the Tusk looked in general. Like the walrus.
The fleshiness of it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It was pretty cool. So.
Okay. Is there anything defensible about this film besides, it, unless you, I mean, even if you are the biggest, most blind fan, although a blind fan wouldn't know they're blind fans, right, if you tell them, of the podcast, what is the biggest thing going for it besides that? Is it just the cultural interest of watching two big cinema icons, kids on screen, and what kind of experiment that is? Because that's kind of unique. It's not. It's often. I mean, it's so rarely done, and that's kind of a unique thing about the movie, that could be said. But that's more like an anthropological side that doesn't even exist. There shouldn't exist in this movie anyway. And the way that these, it's almost like there's a little bit of a meta quality. There's actually a lot of bit of a meta quality in the movie about these two girls who are interested in fame, and they talk about pop culture and fame and the way that relates to their existence and the way they're on the phone a lot, their weird Instagram intros, which is fucking weird. I mean, it was cute, and I liked it overall, but since it went nowhere, I didn't give a shit at the end. Yeah, that was interesting, but that's the farthest I could get with this movie. And I was like, that's kind of interesting, but it doesn't go anywhere. So I let it go. But did you guys go anywhere beyond that? Or did you guys find something to latch onto? Did you guys try to find something to latch onto?
I just felt like I should have been inebriated by certain chemicals, just, and I would have had more fun with this movie.
Okay, maybe that's a question we should ask. Okay, so what's the best drug we could take for this movie?
I'm pretty sure weed. Since Kevin Smith is a weed man, I believe this is good weed humor.
Ruff?
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with that as well.
I think...
Yeah. But overall,
I think we're too clean cut for this movie.
I think acid works better.
Maybe. What I was going to say is that I can't do, when I watched the movie, I couldn't think of anything to hold on to at all. It was hard just to not
sit through it.
It was hard enough to sit through it. It's just kind of everywhere, and like nothing really ties, makes sense.
Right.
And it's just like, it's just a story that's going on. You're like, okay, it's just a story. There's nothing, right? But when you do think about it, I guess it is talking about how, and I guess it's sort of like, I guess how kids are these days, right? With the whole phone thing, with the whole...
Yeah, we're always on our phones, right? We're lazy millennials.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, we're like really into certain things, and like we have like our trends and stuff like that.
Yeah, but there's also been 1,000 movies about that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Made better than this one.
Well, that actually know how to implement things, right?
Right.
So that's where the movie, like, if you want to think about it, I guess that's there, but it's not really, like, what it's talking about.
True.
My thing, as a whole movie, this doesn't really work, but it had these cool little segments, especially, like, Ralph Garman, that's his face? How he's doing all those impressions, and I've only heard him doing it, but, like, how he does them, and you seeing him, it's kind of a cool thing. So that was a cool thing, or them just, like, beating up the little, Nazi bratwursts. That's a cool little thing and stuff. Like, there's little bits and pieces, you know. Oh, that's a cool scene. That's kind of a funny thing.
I think
thing.
I see this as a German today, I'll still be offended.
But no, as a whole movie, it's kind of like, okay. These are little skits. It'd be funny.
Yeah, maybe. Like, and even then, the thing like is that ultimately, the main problem, yeah, the main problem with this movie, dude, I forgot all about that scene. The main problem about this movie is that it's not funny. Very little of this movie I found it got a chuckle out of me, much less a laugh, and it's just not funny. Nothing hits home, and it is clearly the comedy has to be about delivery, how it's delivered, how it's paced. That's 100% what it is. I mean, obviously a good written joke goes with that too, but you can have the best joke and still ruin the punchline 9 times out of 10 if you have no like pizzazz to it, if you have no precision to it, you know what I'm saying? No timing to it. And movies are exactly that way. That's why some comedies work for much better than others, right? So I think this movie has a severe lack of that, and I don't know what in that it has that fucked that up, because it's the same writer who wrote Chasing Amy, you know, You Fucking Tracer. Like, that was like the funny shit that he wrote there. I'm not saying he has to be the same guy, but none of that's on here on the page or in their mouths.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. I said, it's like an inside joke.
Yeah.
It's an inside joke, and if you're not privy to it, you're not going to get it.
And even then, why would you even laugh? I don't get it. If someone made a movie about my life's jokes or something that I would get, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if I'll agree with that even.
That'd be a great home
movie.
It's
a waste of time.
Yeah.
I would just find it a severe waste of time. And these actors, sorry, they're not very good. Just not,
not
good at anything. Again, the delivery of the lines says it all of it too. Like, you don't have to be great actors. You don't have to be great at drama to do good comedy. But they can't do either, that. Either. They can't do either. I mean, the only thing I got from that is that they're friends, and that's one thing I got from them is that they seem like they have chemistry together. Overall, right? These two. Would you agree with that?
It totally.
That's
seems
the
like
one thing I think that I got right.
It totally seems like they go together to poop.
Yeah, right. I believe some of that stuff because I think they're in real life. They're friends, maybe, you know. And they met on the set of Tusk or something. Who knows what? Yeah, so that's the only thing I believe about her. Maybe I said.
They were friends since, like, childhood.
I didn't know how Johnny Depp and Kevin Smith even met.
I'm sure they live in, like, in the L.A. area.
Johnny Depp lives in France.
Yeah.
Thus, they have a whole scene where his daughter speaks in French.
Yeah, yeah.
That and it's Canada also. So
Canada. that's why I said. That's why I was wondering about that.
No, I was reading it. It said that they were friends since childhood.
Yeah, they have been, though.
No, I'm not saying I don't believe you. I'm curious as to how that happened. Because I don't think they were in the movie together. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway.
Probably are.
What's that movie? Jane Silent Strikes Back. I think that's a perfect weed movie, by the way. That's a stoner movie. You know, like that.
But you don't have to be a stoner to watch it.
No, I'm saying it's much more of a stoner movie. It's more wackier in a good way, and this one's wacky in a deadbeat way. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know if we spent too much already talking about this movie, but
What are your likes? What did you like in this movie? I know Luke said, for example, watching Ralph Garman do the impersonations.
I didn't like that.
That's fine. You didn't like it, but did you like anything? I know you mentioned the Instagram thing showing.
No, it was cool at first, and then until I realized that it went nowhere, and then I didn't like it anymore. So I guess ultimately I didn't like it. I liked it in the moment. I mean, I didn't like the retread of the whole convenience store thing. Like, why is he still doing this shit? Get out of this life. I don't know why.
Because convenience stores are convenient.
I'm just saying. Yeah, clearly. I know that's the meta question about it. But, like, this is, like, 70 movies about Clerks, man. Enough.
Slow clap, bro.
Well, obviously. I knew that. They didn't even say a line like that? I thought they did.
She quoted, I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Oh, God, yeah. I know.
Yeah, from A to Z.
Again, poorly delivered. Poorly shown, that line. That should have been funnier when she says the Clerks line. I didn't like any of that. The only thing I maybe liked is the singing babe to the father to convince him to go to the party or something, whatever that was. That was a fake rape party, murder, Satan, whatever the fuck that was. That went really dark and out of nowhere. That's the one thing I liked. Wow, what did you like? If anything.
Yeah, I actually liked their whole band thing, their whole music.
Hmm.
I like their whole like Beastie Boys kind of thing going on where they're like rap talking or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool what they were talking about in the beginning. I do like the Instagram thing also with that whole intro to nothing because it was really just pointless. But I did like it a lot. I just didn't know where it was going with it. That's about it, unfortunately.
Cool. Anything else on you? I mean, none of us recommended, right? So we'll never watch it again unless we get paid for it.
I mean, honestly, if you wanted to see this movie, you would have seen it by now.
Exactly. Sure.
That's also another thing. Like, we're clearly reviewing this for people who were maybe like, oh, a Chemist movie came out, or for those like, oh, I heard about Your Hosers. Most likely you're that person. I doubt that you're the person that listens to this podcast and gets all the things and knows all the Your Hosers stuff before you saw the movie and then saw it. And then you hear this particular podcast listening to us basically rant against the movie that you clearly was made for you. So you're not here either. So clearly we're just meant for those who were mildly curious about a Kevin Smith movie. And that's it. And for those people who wanted to hear A Girl on the Train review and just got stuck listening to the Your Hosers after.
Right.
So for those people, I am sorry. But definitely don't watch the movie that you'll never see anyway. So that's Your Hosers, available online to rent on Amazon right now and other platforms eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's exclusively on Amazon for a couple of days.
All right, so that's it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. You know, don't forget to send us what you think of these films and our thoughts, see what you think of what we think about these movies, at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Check out our website always at otherpodcasts.com. For everything that's coming up for our show, it's going to be available on there. Now, you can follow me on Twitter if you wish to do so for Movie Chatter at Armin Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke.
At Blind Noir.
At Gamer Ralph with two R's and an F.
That's right. No PH shit here.
No. None of that fucking PH.
He hates PH. Sometimes I write PH on his stuff just to make fun of him, but otherwise he hates it.
Yeah, if you ever want to get cut.
Wow. I also do, I'm a part of another show, another podcast that I do is Supernatural Stuff. It's called Supernatural Occurrence Studies. The actual thing to find it is sos-radio.com. SOS-radio is the name of it on iTunes as well. You can find it on any podcast of your choice, SoundCloud and all that jazz. We talk about a lot of supernatural stuff, and not just like ghosts, but aliens and a lot of paranormal stuff or time travel, how that works, and yeah. Mandela effect, for example, some real-life stuff connected to fantasy stuff and sci-fi stuff. So it's really interesting stuff. A lot of that stuff is based on personal material, and I'm their main producer, so I'm not the main host or anything, but I'm on there.
Yeah, it's a great show. You
check
guys,
it out. Yeah.
Mandela effect.
Thank you, Rob. You were talking to some of that.
Sure.
Thank you for commenting on us. Don't forget to donate us for if you want to get the promo show for the month or just to help us out. All podcasting, all the stuff that goes for the donating goes to our podcasting fees and also to buy movie tickets because that shit ain't expensive. Ain't cheap, I mean, sometimes, unless you go to that one station.
Where it's always cheap.
It's always cheap there. It's like $5.
But they don't have all the good movies?
No, they don't.
And the floors are sticky.
Listen, guys, if you really want us to donate enough, whatever, make a comment. We'll even review Madea for you, or Madea, or whatever.
Is it Madea?
I don't know what it's called.
I don't
know
either. Madea
does
Halloween.
Luke really wants to watch one of those movies.
I think he does too. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a single one of those, not a single frame.
Neither have I.
Anyway, also, if you can't do any of that, and don't worry about it, you can always shoot us an iTunes review. That would be amazing to give us traffic to our feed. It costs you nothing but a minute of your time. Remember, we come out. We are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. With that in mind, next time, on November 4th, our next show, Ralph, you have the movie roster for next time. Do you remember what they were, or want me to name them for you?
I believe I do remember what they were, but you're going to name them anyway, because I forgot.
Okay. One is Cafe Society. We'll be reviewing Woody Allen's latest film, which will be available. It's already available to rent.
It's available to watch, to rent.
On Amazon, at least.
Yeah, for sure.
Most likely VOD at some point.
Yeah. That's the one that came out earlier in the year.
Earlier in the year.
So the ones that we're watching that are coming out soon or are out already is going to be...
American Pastoral,
yes.
Which is the directorial debut, I think, of Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
Also starring Ewan McGregor.
Also starring himself, yeah.
And it's based off a book that I know nothing about, but I hear it's a pretty complicated book. But that's all I know about it.
Yeah.
So sure. Maybe
I know nothing about this at all, so...
Yeah, you just looked at thought it was interesting and...
Yeah, I thought it was
interesting. We're just going to blind see it, see how it is.
Right,
hopefully
exactly.
It's good. And also our spotlight review for that will be Jack Reacher 2, The Reachening.
The Reachening, yep.
I think that's the full official studio title.
I'm pretty sure that is the official title.
Yeah.
You can look it up at thereachening.com.
Thereachening.org, actually.
Yeah. Org, it's an organization.
Yep, it's an org. It's the second
government.
Jack Reacher movie, but yeah. We were too lazy to figure out what the subtitle to that title is, so we just said Jack Reachening, The Reachening, whatever the fuck. It's a new Tom Cruise. Watch that. So those are the movies we'll be reviewing in 2 weeks from now. Until then, my loyal cinephiles. I am Oscar.
And Luke.
And Ralph.
See you later.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?